Why are businesses like HelloVit choosing Apple products and services?
So we started the business 2 years ago. We had a few people who were used to PCs, and this was their first foray into Macs. But it's been super smooth getting everyone onto those devices, and everyone seems really, really happy.
Find out how Mac can help you run and grow your business at apple.co/HelloVit.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, November 18th. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. For years, WhatsApp has lost to iMessage in the battle for American texters. But lately, something has shifted as millions of people start to gravitate towards the green app for the first time. We're taking a look at what's changed. Then, workers have long feared being replaced by AI. Now, at companies big and small, they're increasingly being shown the door because they're not using AI tools enough. Stay with us to find out the latest way AI is impacting employees. But first, if you travel pretty much anywhere internationally, chances are a tour guide or your Airbnb host will try to get a hold of you on WhatsApp. But back in the US, the Meta-owned messaging app has struggled to gain traction, as the iPhone's dominance keeps iMessage in prime position. But that's starting to change. Monthly active iOS users last quarter were up 39% compared with the same period in 2020, according to market intelligence firm Sensor Tower. Our personal technology columnist, Nicole Nguyen, is here to explain what happened. Nicole, WhatsApp is owned by Meta, which was certainly never going to rest on its laurels, particularly when it's in competition with Apple. Can you take us through some of the strategies it's tried over the past few years to grow American users?
Well, a lot of the investment that WhatsApp has made in order to make it successful in other countries, particularly optimizing WhatsApp in low connectivity areas, also benefits its growth in the US. But most recently, this year, WhatsApp has been really investing on making sure it's close to parity with iMessage in terms of device and platform support. So now you can use WhatsApp on an iPad, which you couldn't for the first decade and a half that WhatsApp was around. WhatsApp also released a companion app for Apple Watch. It also made investments in its Mac desktop app and its Windows 11 app. And so there are a lot of ways Meta is trying to break through Apple's walled garden. But now that people are using WhatsApp to engage with their outer network, parent groups, local community groups, school groups, church groups, they are starting to see the benefits of using WhatsApp over iMessage.
And one big issue that iMessage has is this green bubble. How has WhatsApp kind of exploited that sense of shame or embarrassment that some people have around that in its communications?
Apple did try to improve green bubble cross-platform messaging by adopting this standard called Rich Communication Services last year. And this makes Android to iPhone texts even richer. You can send high-resolution photos, you can send high-resolution videos, you can send text messages over Wi-Fi, but it was not a WhatsApp killer. RCS is still not end-to-end encrypted like WhatsApp. Also, you can't support the gigantic 1,000-person group chats like you can on WhatsApp.
Group chats are a huge part of the story that you wrote on this. Can you explain a little bit why that has been such an unlock for WhatsApp in the battle for messaging?
iMessage caps group chats at 32 people. And so as soon as a group chat gets over a certain size, it has to transition to another platform. Historically, for Americans, that probably was a forum or email. And now it's WhatsApp because the app has video calling, audio calling. You can create polls. There are also a ton of tools for admins. So it's just become a super app for anyone who's organizing large groups of people.
And the bulk of Meta's business obviously comes from advertising. For a while now, watchers of the company have been anticipating that leaking a little bit more into WhatsApp, which is free to use right now. Can you set the scene for how Meta is monetizing the platform right now and what might be coming in the future?
Meta is approaching ads in WhatsApp very slowly because it knows it has to very delicately balance this humongous precious social network it has in WhatsApp, which has over 3 billion users, its longstanding commitment to privacy, and also its desire to monetize this platform that it invests a large amount in. So this year, ads started rolling out in what's called Status. It's a separate tab, separate from your chats, and not everyone sees it, but businesses and channels can display ads in this tab. This tab is not end-to-end encrypted, and also Meta AI, which is Meta's AI chatbot, now has more prominence inside of the private chat tab, but your chat with Meta AI isn't necessarily end-to-end encrypted. It's not private to you because Meta can view your prompts for safety reasons or also to train its future models. So that's some ways that Meta's business priorities are creeping into this distinct culture that is WhatsApp within the larger company.
That was WSJ personal technology columnist Nicole Nguyen. Are you a WhatsApp user? If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to let us know in this episode's poll or leave us a comment with your preferred messaging app. Coming up, there's a new existential threat for employees, and it's not being replaced by AI. It's being replaced by somebody who knows how to use it. That's after the break. When Accenture's CEO Julie Sweet said the company would be, quote unquote, exiting employees who weren't getting the hang of AI, the latest stage of the AI workplace revolution was born. Companies are starting to cut workers who aren't embracing the technology and replacing them with those who are. My colleague Peter Ciampelli spoke to WSJ workplace reporter Lindsay Ellis to learn more about the trend.
So, bosses at these companies want employees to adapt to using AI, particularly by spending time training and experimenting with how they can integrate it. How are we seeing this play out in sort of the day-to-day of company life?
A lot of companies have integrated these required trainings on AI, digging into really practical skills and also sharing knowledge of how are you using this? How are you using this? And sort of having a brainstorm session among employees. But when it comes down to it, they also are using both sticks and carrots to make sure that their employees are in fact using this tech, that it's not just something that you attend a one-off training and then you never open that tab again. So you have some companies that are incentivizing early adopters with cash prizes or with plum assignments. Other companies are saying this is going to be part of your performance evaluation. And in a few cases, we've seen organizations push out individuals who are not using artificial intelligence in their day-to-day work.
So on the other end of the spectrum, there's an enterprise software company called Ignite Tech, which is one of the companies focusing on this sort of encouragement of employees adapting to AI. How have they implemented an AI-first strategy?
At this point, it goes beyond encouragement and goes into requirements. So basically, Ignite Tech a couple years ago said, we are going to mandate AI across the company. Employees earned points for sharing on Slack what they were learning about AI. At one point last year, every Monday was dubbed an AI Monday. And so basically people had to spend their whole Monday experimenting with AI and sort of brainstorming ways to speed up business processes. But then the company sort of went further. Employees were required to self-assess how often they used AI. And afterward, the company basically put all of those self-assessments into ChatGPT and had ChatGPT rank all of the assessments and say, these people are at the top, these people are at the bottom in terms of kind of self-proclaimed AI usage. A human backstopped the ChatGPT analysis, and then the company laid off the lowest scoring performers. Rounds of AI layoffs continued several times after that, and the company has really pushed to require this new technology.
Ignite Tech cut employees who weren't using AI enough or well enough, and they also cut employees who were outspoken against the AI strategy. And this wasn't always just the rank and file employees. One was the company's chief product officer. Can you tell us about that?
The chief product officer, his name's Greg Coyle, he said he was fully on board with AI's potential to improve the products and add new capabilities to the business. But he raised a flag internally, he said, basically saying that, you know, this technology is so early stage. If you do these widespread cuts and your AI plan doesn't work out the way you expected to, that is a huge business risk. He said he brought that up in a meeting, and then a few months later, he was among those who was pushed out. He totally acknowledges that AI is coming, in his perspective, whether or not you like it. But he was advocating, he said, for a more nuanced talent strategy.
So employees are feeling pressured to use AI, but why would they maybe not want to?
A good chunk of U.S. workers who don't use AI, like upwards of 40%, said that the main reason why they didn't was because they didn't believe it could help their work. And another fairly large chunk at 11% said that they didn't really want to change their workflow. So you have both the technical limitations and also just the challenges of encouraging broad adoption and making sure that your workforce is adapting to the change.
That was WSJ reporter Lindsay Ellis speaking to Peter Ciampelli. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to take this episode's poll or leave us a comment. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Katie Ferguson. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back later this morning with TMB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.